Group Pablo Fatidis from Auric Business Accelerator. Hiring the right people is our topic of discussion this evening. And it's pivotal not only from a growth perspective, because in South Africa, as a small business, if you hire the wrong people, and no matter how wrong they are, and they are quite determined to not relinquish their position, no matter how wrong they are for the company and how unhappy they are simply because it brings them an income, you then don't have a big HR department. You don't have the capacity to battle in the context of South Africa's labor laws. It's very hard for a conscious uncoupling, as I described it earlier.
It is very hard. And Bruce, you know, very often, if you look at the evolution of a business, when you start a business and you move it up to from startup all the way through to, honestly, 100, 120 million rand, the people issues are a major material issue in the sense that...
But it's a material issue if you're hiring at 1 million or 2 million or 5 million, because there's going to be one of you and then there'll be two of you, and that's 50% more people. And then...
Completely.
There are three of you, and that's 66.6% more people than you had when you started. It's big.
Completely. It's most material when you hire the very first person, because by definition... you're probably hiring them for the wrong reason, and you're probably hiring for the wrong reason. So you're hiring the wrong person and you're hiring for the wrong reason. And yet when you hire that person, they get paid before you. They get paid hopefully before rent. They get paid typically before SARS. So you really are last in line, and you've taken a big chunk of your free cash flow out. And I can assure you that first person all the way through to perhaps person number 30 or 40 or 50, when you hire them with a massive expectation that's locked and loaded and probably mostly incorrectly thought through. So those relationships very seldom work effectively and efficiently. And as you rightly say, the big cost is dealing with it through the CCMA process, which is arduous and time consuming, but there is a way to manage that process effectively
But you're a startup who is learning the ropes of every single aspect. It's all brand new to you. Mm-hmm. Everything is brand new to you. Applying for a VAT number, registering for tax, ensuring that your admin's in order, ensuring that your suppliers are delivering, ensuring that your customers are happy. And now you've got somebody moping in the corner because actually this isn't as much fun as they thought it would be, and they're just refusing to budge. That's the sort of stuff that can kill the joy out of the most optimistic optimist.
It does. And you know, If you don't employ people, you can never grow beyond yourself.
Yep.
And, you know, I saw a really interesting comment on Facebook, and this one individual saying, you know, one of the reasons that many businesses don't sell is because they get built as lifestyle businesses and not built as assets of value. And here's the irony. A lifestyle business suggests you are working in a business to enjoy a particular lifestyle. And it suggests that it's more than just money. It suggests that you are looking for time to spend on other things, be it family or be it hobbies or whatever the case might be. You know, not everyone wants to build the next multi-billion dollar business in any environment. And yet here's the irony. If you don't get it right to build that business with people, which are quintessential, and you don't get the people relationship right, Bruce, it pulls you back into the business the whole time. Everything gets delegated up to you. You're left with all the cost of the people you've employed. You get no support in releasing you to do the things that you thought you would do in the so-called lifestyle experience.
Or even just to release you to do the stuff that you need to do that only you can do.
Correct. Build the business.
Mark Lamberti, former chief executive of Imperial, recall a quote from him saying, you know, you've got to empower people to do the jobs that they are hired to do. And you've got to give them support and you've got to encourage them. And even if you think that you're the only person who can do a particular task, you've got to allow somebody else to come and do that task. And even if they only do it at 60 or 70% of what you could have done it at, they've still done 60 or 70% of the work. You're not doing that legwork in the beginning. And you can always come in and do the helicopter overview and check it out. But you've just bought yourself a whole bunch of more time, either to have a life, which you've been missing out on since the startup began, or it gives you time to focus on the next thing or the next phase of growth or the next hire to take the business to a next level.
Completely. And, you know, a lot of people who, let's say, don't particularly enjoy working with people and don't have perhaps good people skills or find people, because people in a business are the single most unpredictable area of control in the business. And a lot of people don't like building businesses that employ people or require people for those particular reasons. So they opt to build a product-based business. And they go and they get a product that they believe really is unique. It stands apart. It has a distinct character to it, be it a piece of technology or be it an industrial tool or whatever the case might be. But here's the thing. Products don't differentiate a business anymore, because whatever your product is, I can assure you, competitors and competing brands to that product are equally as good. They're equally as good, feature for feature, capability for capability. So the only way to compete in a product-based environment
is to deliver a service along with the product.
Is to deliver a service, which means that you need people and technology. Technology is the easier part. The people is the most difficult part. So getting that right is absolutely vital.
How long, this is a quiz question for you, how long did it take Adrian Gore to make his first hire when he started Discovery? He went from Liberty, he went and sat wherever RMB was at the time, and they created the initial funding. He was given a desk and a chair and probably a lamp and a pen and piece of paper and said, well, go and create a product. You've got this idea to revolutionize health insurance in South Africa. Go, off you go. Go and do it. And he made a list for himself of 10 things he needed to do. And first, and he says this is in his study at home. First on his list is hire an actuary. How long did it take him to do that, do you think?
9 months.
Six. Herschel Myers, I think. Herschel, if you're listening, Adrian, if you're listening, or anybody who knows the inside story, I think it was Herschel Myers, who's the, I think runs the life business at Discovery now, certainly a very senior and seasoned director of Discovery, but took 6 months to before making that first hire. Don't rush it.
Absolutely do not rush
and
it.
And 21 years later, Discovery is worth 180 billion rand. So, you know, you've got time.
You do have time. And don't make it in a stressed environment, because that's when the majority of people say, I need some space, I can't breathe, there's too much happening, chaos is everywhere, I need my silver bullet, I need that person who's going to step in and remarkably deal with customers, or remarkably handle operations, or remarkably sort out all the administration and get things back under control. That's where most people are motivated in their early stage hires.
Pavlo Fatidis is our guest, as always, on a Thursday evening. Building a business by getting the right people to do the right thing at the right time, by doing the right kind of effective recruiting. You've got to get a lot of stuff right, because you don't want to be making mistakes. Pavlo Fatidis, Auric Business Accelerator. Let's go through the nitty-gritty of the hires. If you've made a boo-boo, made a blunder, or made an extraordinary success of hiring the right people, and give us an uplifting tale about getting great people to come in and help you grow your business, I would love to hear those stories. So would Pavlo. We'd all like to hear your stories. On 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. So is there a formula to hiring? Is there a mechanism? Is there a strategy? Is there a plan? Is there a, what's the word I'm looking for?
System.
A system. I knew that. I'd forgotten about a word. For those of you wondering why Pavlo's laughing, it's because it's a long-running joke. Pavlo is Mr. Systems, and he's absolutely right about it. I tease him about systems, but if you don't have systems, you don't have a business. You have a chaotic smorgasbord of mush, which may make you some money in the short term, but you are going to go bust. So do you have a system, a proven, tested system, that helps ensure that you get the hiring right more often than not?
I believe I do. So just to recall, a system is a series of activities in a sequence that can be measured.
Right.
Okay. On that basis, I do have a system. Also, just let me qualify that remark. A system is continually improving because it changes with the environment that you're operating in. So this particular system works well in South Africa. It would work well in the United States. It would kind of work in the UK. It absolutely would not work in Australia or in Europe. But in this environment over here, it provides a very good, a very high success rate.
Okay. What is the system?
Okay. So the first thing you do is to be very clear why you're hiring someone. Is it to do a job? Because, Bruce, I don't believe we should ever hire people to do jobs. You know, a job is typically designed, defined as marketing. And marketing can mean almost anything to anybody. There's so many different interpretations around it. Or operations. I'm an operations manager. I'm an operations superintendent. There's so many different interpretations around it. And I think that's the beginning of where things go wrong. It makes it very, very hard to assess the candidate applying. It makes it hard for the candidate to understand what the opportunity really is. So the starting point behind getting your recruitment process right is, I'm sorry, you have to turn the activities of your business into systems that can be measured. Because what you're looking for is somebody who can be trained on that system, can operate that system, and can be performance managed on that system. So it could be a system of generating leads through a marketing activity, or the system of converting leads in sales, or the system of delivering on a promise through operations. But the moment you define the opportunity as a system operator, as opposed to a job, it starts to create a very, very clear communication and starts to remove the expectation gap. So that's the starting point. The next thing is, in beginning with the end in mind, you define the job opportunity in relation to the activities of the system. I'm looking for somebody who can operate the following activities, A, B, C, D, E. Because in that, as a candidate, I can assess myself against that. I can see if it's of interest to me. And you, as an employer, are getting more and more clear around the function that you're employing somebody for.
The point you make is so critical. It's like, okay, I need somebody to help around the office. Well, that's fine. And when they don't help around the office nearly enough because you're irritated with them because they are having two tea breaks a day and actually went to the dentist one afternoon when it was quiet, you were meant to be helping. It's like, well, what am I supposed to be doing?
You know, the number of people who get employed into a business and spend probably about 6-7 months before they are given any direction or leadership is profound. It makes it very frustrating for everybody. This job description also has a very clear sense of what you're looking for from a demographic, skill set, geographic, psychographic perspective.
But it also helps you define what it is that you want, because if you don't know exactly what it is that you want and you're going to be interviewing 10 or 20 people, how on earth are you going to choose the best person when you haven't yet defined clearly in your own mind what it is that you're looking for? And I think lots of people make the mistake of, I just need a body warm with a pulse.
Completely.
And half a brain.
And then the biases, that confirmation bias is in full flare. You only hear what you want to hear. You don't really see what you are engaging in. So once you've done that, the next thing is you're going to design and distribute the offer. You're going to do it in a way where you find the appropriate platform. You might use there are a whole lot of online sites where typically you can post for jobs and communicate the opportunities. And when you do that, Bruce, that offer should always say, I want a covering letter and I want a CV attached. Because in effect, what you're doing is you're starting to already test whether the candidates have read the content, engaged with it, considered it, and understood it.
You get a one pager saying, I saw your ad for the job. Could you send me more details, please? You can simply dispense with any formalities and move on to the next worthwhile candidate.
Completely. And also, when you get that CV, it gives a very good sense of how people see themselves. It gives a really, really good insight. Once that's done, you're going to then shortlist against the job spec and against whether people fulfilled the requirements you asked for. In other words, the covering letter and the CV. And all you're looking for are the top 20 in the first shortlist, because we're going to do two shortlists. You select those top 20. You look to see that they followed instruction and really ignore mostly the content of the CV that are bullet pointed. You know, when someone says, oh, I brought in a 500 zillion rand deal, or I opened up 15 branches, That kind of stuff is of no real consequence, because we all know that everybody works in teams and everyone works in relation to everyone else in their former areas of employment.
So help me with being the eye specialist, because this is this person looking for an opportunity and they may very well have led teams that delivered the following things. How do you deal with the eye problem when selling yourself to a prospective employer if it's not about I, if it's not about me?
Well, if in the instance of when you're employing somebody, you're not looking necessarily for that I specialist. You're looking for somebody who has the ability to communicate effectively, demonstrate some level of empathy, and most importantly, has the ability to work within the team. Because by definition, if they're your first hire, they're working with you. If they're your 20th hire, they're working with 19 other people. You know, business is really interlinked, especially if it's built in, let's call it a more modern version. In other words, not siloed, but it's built in an integrated, agile way. Everybody communicates with everybody, and everybody in the individual instances has an impact on culture within that business.
And people who've got established relationships within that business, you should already have your culture kind of defined, and it sort of evolved itself. And then you bring the square peg and you put it into the round hole, and calamity, especially in that environment of 15 to 20 people, one person can spoil the party.
And where do we see it so often? You know, typically with these big soccer clubs, they bring in some excellent star, and next minute the entire vibe in the club and the remaining, how many people on the soccer field?
11.
The remaining 10.
Well, actually, no, that was a trick question. 23. And the sidelines, 25.
Okay, so once you've got your short list of 20, what you then do is you invite them to a briefing. And a briefing is an event.
Well, hold on a second. Nobody comes to an interview straight away. You get 20 people and mm-hmm. you say to them,
the top 20.
Okay.
That you've identified on your short list.
And you tell them that this is a gathering of competitors, of peers.
Yeah, you say you're invited to a briefing, and the purpose of that briefing is to better inform you about the opportunity, to introduce you to the company culture, the skill requirements, the performance that I would expect, the remuneration package and how it works, and any material terms and conditions of employment.
I've never heard of this before. So 20 people in the room, all vying for one job.
Yes.
And then what do you do? Lock all the doors and shout fire and see who doesn't panic.
Would
be fun.
So what you do is you present the opportunity, and at that point in time, once you've presented it, you field questions from the floor. And it's really interesting to see who volunteers questions and who doesn't.
No, but again, you volunteer a question in that environment, you're giving away IP. You also, if you don't ask a question, you're holding on to your IP, you're not a team player. The dynamics of what you are assessing in that space is interesting.
Already starts to unfold who's sitting in front of you when you are presenting and you're the job offerer. It gives you a very good insight. Once a briefing's completed, what I then do is I ask them to complete an application form.
But they've already sent you a CV and mm-hmm. a covering letter.
Mm-hmm.
What's on the application form?
So the application form asks a series of questions that will test cultural fit, that will test skills, that will test an understanding of the job function that I've described in the briefing session, that will test an understanding and let's call it interest of the industry and my business in particular. I'm wanting to see who's put the yards in and the effort in to really hear, engage, digest, and then communicate.
And out of those 20, 5 might drop out.
Out of those 20, let's say 5, 6, 7 might drop out. So let's say out of 20, 10 drop out because it's too much effort now.
Suddenly it's like now you're sorting wheat from the chaff,
mm-hmm.
and then you create out of those remaining 10 a couple that you want to talk to.
Mm-hmm. So,
but you're not going to interview them.
No. So 10 people apply. Now I have an application form and CV structure in effect, structured for me to be able to compare an apple to an apple to an apple to an apple. Because one of the toughest things is when you get 20 CVs or 5 CVs for that matter, and they're all differently structured and they're all differently arranged in terms of the information. It makes it very hard to spot what's special and what's not.
So how then do you go through an interview process?
Okay, so we've got the application. From there, let's say 10 applied. I shortlist down to 3 or 5, depending on what the opportunity is that I'm looking to fulfill. And from there, I then invite those 3 or 5 to individually, separately, by themselves, come pitch for the opportunity.
That is not the traditional approach. Traditionally, you walk into a room, you sit, you're invited to sit down, you sit down, you get asked questions, you then asked, would you like to ask me any questions? And at the end of that, it's either yes or no. Now you're saying to five people, you should know this business by now. You've been through a process with us already. How are you going to fulfill the obligations of this job, and how are you going to fit into the environment which we have to offer you should you be the successful candidate?
Completely. Because when I hire, I'm looking for character. I'm looking for people who have drive, who have some level of creativity. Some people, I'm looking for people who can communicate and engage. And I'm looking for people who have got the hunger for the opportunity more than someone with a remarkable skill set.
Then you bring three into the building and say, the best performer by the end of the week gets the job, because I would think that the CCMA might have a problem with that.
No, what I do is, from the pitches, I select my top two, and then those top two are interviewed by two or three different people within the organization. And from there, we make a final selection.
You make a selection. The person then comes into the business. You've got the system so you can measure whether or not they were the right choice or not.
Absolutely. And during the briefing session, I spoke about the first 3 months of performance measurement. So everybody knows that they're coming on board, they're going to be capacitated, but they're going to perform from day one. Because ultimately, in that three-month area where you typically have the probation period, that's when you either secure and finalize, or you say, you know what? Bad call. I made a mistake. You're not delivering. I've provided you with all the support. Let's part ways in terms of the
How
contract.
Much more successful does this is this system to what you might have done before this?
Honestly, Bruce, it's given me about a 92. It's in the 90s percent. In the 90s percent success. It's given me a lot more confidence and a lot more, it's given me a lot more confidence that when I make the decision, I'm prepared to actually invest. Most importantly, my time in capacitating that individual.
Pavlo Fotiades from Auric Business Accelerator.